Welcome to History 605, South Dakota State Historical Society's podcast, where we talk to historians, curators, filmmakers, artists, and authors about how they interpret the past.
10,000 years from now, I think we can meditate and wonder whether our descendants, because I think they'll still be here, what they will think about us. And let us hope that at least they will give us the benefit of the doubt.
I'm Dr. Ben Jones, South Dakota State Historian and Director of the State Historical Society. Join me and our guests as we think historically.
So it is most appropriate and fitting that in our first year of our second century that this should also be a year of reconciliation between the Indian people and the non-Indian people alike.
History 605 is sponsored by the Gruver Family Trust and done in partnership with South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to History 605. Today on the show, we have Crystal Minch. Crystal is the director of the Meade Museum in Yankton, South Dakota. And how long have you been doing that job now, Crystal?
I've been here 19 years.
19 years. And let's go a little bit about the museum and the organization that you lead. What can you tell us about the history of that and then some of the things you do? And then the topic of the show is the Jefferson Peace Medal that you have on loan and on display here. And we definitely want to get into that. That's something that's really amazing to talk about. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the Meade Museum?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much for having us on. Excited to share some of the things that we've got going on. I know a lot of people think, you know, Meade Museum in Yankton, we're kind of a new museum, but we're not. We're pretty old. We've been around for a while. We started collecting in 1936.
Okay.
The Dump chapter of the DAR started collecting for us, and we merged that into a Dakota Territorial Museum. And the Dakota Territorial Museum was taken over by Yankton County Historical Society. So that's where we are now. We are the Yankton County Historical Society, owns and operates the Meade Museum. So we've been at the Meade here. It would be part of the old State Hospital campus on the north side of Yankton since 2018.
Okay. So that, I guess that's the date I was thinking of, is when that building became the Meade Museum, but as an organization, been around since the 30s. That's great. When you can collect historical items for 90 years, you probably have a pretty good collection. I mean, stuff can kind of walk in the door that you woke up in the morning, you went to work, and you had no idea somebody was going to consider donating something to you. And that happens episodically, but consistently over 90 years, you probably have amassed a pretty good collection of things. So just generally in your your general collection, when somebody comes to the Meade Museum, what can they expect to see?
So as we're still moving into our new space, our newly renovated space, we wanted to ensure, because the way that we had set things up previously, there's no such thing as a storage room to put anything at the old location. And yeah, you're right. When you've been collecting for 90 years, we do amass quite a collection. You know, we're 50,000 artifacts and counting.
Okay.
So it's a pretty decent chunk. And so, yeah, you know, when we were at the old place, kind of everything was out, and it was really hard to really see what we had. So here at the new facility, we're really excited because we've been able to move into the new space kind of slowly, so that we can have professional exhibits, but set up stories, more interactive, more interpretive. And it's really been interesting because as people that were great fans of ours at the old location, they come to the Meade Museum now and they see some of these artifacts that it's really maybe just that one artifact. And they go, wow, when did you get this? Well, 90 years ago, we got this. So it's a lot of fun to, you know, when we moved to, you know, be able to go through that collection and really figure out what do we have, and some of the connections that we have made in this process is absolutely a fantastic job to have. That's for
right.
sure.
It makes things a lot of fun. Well, let's talk about and why I wanted to have you on the show. A couple of weeks ago in Yankton in your museum, you had an event with one of those gentlemen who walked in the door and probably talked to you about something he had in his, well, literally in his basement.
Right.
So, and I'm speaking of Mr. Larry Ness, who's an avid collector of artifacts of the Northern Plains, and the Jefferson Peace Medal that he had is now on display So I wonder if you can step through the conversation and how that how he came to lend the Jefferson Peace Medal to you guys for an exhibit.
Certainly not an easy task. It was a lot of years of conversation. Larry and I have been talking about, in fact, this 1 4-inch Peace Medal that he had in his collection. It was one of many that he had in his collection of various sizes from various presidents. Mm-hmm. As far as the Jefferson specific, I think he had maybe 2 or 3, you know, but not necessarily the clear provenance. The great thing about this particular Peace Medal, he did loan it to us for a day.
Okay.
Back in 2019. And that was just enough for me to go, you know, a day is just not long enough. You know, how do we get this to be a little longer than one day? And so I've literally been working on it with him since 2019. Okay. We had to move into our space. We needed to get some of the security things in line. And in the meantime, you know, he and I would meet about really the background to this particular piece, mm-hmm. and what kind of trail can we put together for this one in particular, because this one is the one that was found along the creek, Platte Creek, in South Dakota.
Okay. Well, let's back up a little bit and just maybe give the audience a sense of what is a peace medal? Who made them? Why were they made? And who were they given to? And just kind of the general story. And then we can dive into the particulars about this particular Jefferson Peace Medal.
Yeah, you know, peace medals are something that it's been done for centuries, honestly. You know, in European countries, there was a similar kind of method of exchanging a medal of sorts with usually that king's image on it, or dignitary's image on it, and exchanged a lot of times for just simple things as trade agreements, you know, as a way of having good rapport and basically saying, yes, we agree to trade with you, you agree to trade with us, and we're going to do this in a peaceful way. The peace medal comes about then when United States, and starts, of course, with our very first president, Washington, had medals made and used them with Native nations in the states to have basically that same concept where we agree to work with you, you agree to work with us, we're going to trade between us. And honestly, when other, you know, Washington wasn't the first one, obviously other countries, when they came to North America to trade with Native nations, they did the same thing. And brought medals and basically said, hey, we'll make a deal with you. And in fact, so then as presidents have done these, you know, Thomas Jefferson, probably one of the most famous to do peace medals, mostly because of the Clark Expedition.
Yeah.
And you know, Jefferson definitely understood the concept of the peace medal and its importance. It's so much so that he even instructed Lewis and Clark when they handed them out between their expedition of 1804 to 1806 to take back the other countries, the medals given to these countries.
Yes.
They said, we're going to give you, you know, Jefferson's medal. We're trading with you, but you're only going to trade with us. We're exclusive here.
Right.
So they would take those other medals from the other countries so that it was clear, yeah. You know, who's trading with them. So,
yeah, the exclusivity of the trade was something that the United States is very concerned with. I mean, when the Louisiana Purchase is purchased, the French and the United States and the British had never really, you know, there was no cartography such as these days where we can sit with our phone and know that we're on the wrong side of a border or the right side of a border. And so effectively the border was kind of where the group of people were that had trade relations with the United States. And certainly the Jefferson administration, the Madison administration, the Adams, John Quincy Adams, and so forth in the 1820s, 30s, 40s. The concern is that the British are coming as far south as Kansas and so forth and getting the trade that the United States should have exclusive trade with. And so the peace medal then is a kind of a form of an agreement, a piece of communication between the United States government and the tribe that says, we're your trade buddies and they're not. So
yeah, absolutely.
So this particular medal then, you mentioned that it was found by a family in South Dakota. What's the provenance? That's a that's a museum inside the baseball term, provenance, which is the history of the item. What's the provenance or the history of this particular piece metal then?
Yeah, so we can go back about 150 years on this particular metal, which is really quite great because it stayed within one family and the story that went with it was really great. It was handed down quite well. And basically what it was is, and I don't know if it was 1870s, 80s, 90s, but we definitely know it was before 1900 that, we kind of estimated in about 1880s that along Platte Creek in South Dakota, there was a homesteader who was along the creek. Their land was along the creek, and a Native Nation group had come by and had asked, can we camp along the creek here? And they said, yes, absolutely, that's fine. And they were there. The nation was there. Unfortunately, we don't know which one.
Okay.
We don't know which nation. You know, it's very close to the Yankton Nation Reservation, so maybe, you know, it may have been Ihantowa. We're not entirely sure, but that part they didn't, you know, one nation was probably distinguishing, you know, between the two. It wasn't something they were concerned about at the time.
Right.
And so after they had moved on, after those few days, the homesteaders' children went down to see if they could find any leftovers, trinkets, whatnot, and they find a big trinket, and they find this 4-inch Jefferson piece metal on the ground. So its exposure to the elements, very minimal. So it's really a beautiful piece. So they picked it up, and that following Christmas, we think it's within that same year, and we don't have the exact date when this baby was born of the year, so that's why we know it's only in the 1880s, but a neighbor's had a little baby boy.
Okay.
And so the kids decided, well, we don't have anything to give this new baby boy for a present, and so they give him this piece metal.
Oh, wow.
Because it was shiny piece of metal, you know, and so they gave it to this baby. And his name was Roscoe, and he grows up, has it, and then it is handed down in his family until it ends up, and I think it was Indiana, and that's when it was sold then at auction in 2014. The family had decided, you know, what are we going to do with this thing? And it was great because when Larry had loaned it to us in 2019 for a day, and one of the descendants of Roscoe came to see the metal here. He doesn't live locally, so he came quite a distance to see it. And he had told stories about how, you know, every once in a while it would hang on the Christmas tree. Christmas time, you know, something shiny, a shiny ornament. And the kids would take it to school as show and tell. I think it's kind of amazing that it has survived. Because, you know, these medals, if you don't know anything about the 4-inch Jefferson piece medals, they were minted in 1801. They're made of thin silver, and they're not very heavy.
Right.
They're not durable at all. And they're very, very light compared to what you would think a solid piece of metal would be, because the mint at the time did not have the resources to mint a solid metal that big.
Now, these I think were made in Philadelphia. When Lewis and Clark kind of got their orders to go out on the expedition, they went to Philadelphia and other places to buy all their necessary supplies, get their boats shaped up, buy their firearms, get their gunpowder, all this kind of stuff. And it's quite an expedition they're going to go out on. And part of their shopping list was to get cast Jefferson piece medals, because they didn't want to hand out Adams's piece medals. That would be a faux pas. Their boss probably wouldn't appreciate. And so, yeah, they had to get them. Jefferson is elected in 1800. So in 1801, it's time for the new president to get his ducks in a row and get his own medals minted, send out the Lewis and Clark expedition. And they start out in St. Louis in, like I think you said, in 1804 through 1806, right? And they come through this part of our neck of the woods in August and September. I think they hit the Vermilion Yankton area in August of 1804. Does that sound right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That does sound right. They went to Spirit Mound, and then they met with the Nation here across the river from Yankton. yeah. and up on the block.
Yeah.
And they had handed out those 4-inch. So what we have here is that 4-inch size. Lewis and Clark carried 3 4-inch size medals. Okay. That's the thing we kind of get a lot of questions about, is we have a lot of people ask us, uh-huh. well, is the one you have carried by Lewis and Clark? I'm like, well, we spent the last, months, maybe years, you know, Larry and I have been trying to figure out, you know, how do you connect that dot? How can you get, you know, we know the last 150 years. How do we find out about the 100 years before that? That's apparently logistically almost impossible. So we have basically researched enough to know that it may not ever be solved. And I said, oh, that was very disappointing. Because, you know, there's so many variations and not really enough good, solid information. It's not like each of these medals had a serial number on them. You know, right. If they did, and Lewis and Clark had said, hey, we gave serial number such and such to this nation or this nation, man, what a gem, right? Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you know, they didn't get incredibly that much detail that we could really connect those two dots, but right. we can get pretty close, and it seems to have some accuracy depending between, because there was Jefferson trading medals versus the ones that Lewis and Clark carried and so forth. But
yeah, is there a distinction between the Lewis and Clark medals and any other Jefferson Peace Medal?
Necessarily. So like there's even a difference in a very short amount of time. I believe the original stamp had an imperfection in it. And then they quickly fixed that. And so being able to tie that, but I think that was only a certain size, because that's the part that we're running into problems is sometimes the Jefferson medal has been so generalized that we're unable to say the smaller size. There was like a two inch size, three, yep. thereabouts,
yeah.
which imperfection was in which one.
Right.
We know basically from the construction of this one that we can definitely take it back to Jefferson's administration.
Okay.
And that's as close as we can get to, and to know that it wasn't necessarily a later, you know, they made them for so long after
right.
you know, his administration, and then they were modified and replicated. This is definitely not a replicated one. This would have been part of some original mint work. Mm-hmm. And that's the fun part, I guess, about having the medal here is perhaps it opens up that conversation again. You know, I'm very much excited for that Jefferson medal expert to walk in the door and say, oh, this is exactly what you have.
Yeah.
So far, you know, nationally, we've sent this picture around to quite a few who are very, very well versed in these medals, who says, you know, being able to connect the medal directly to Lewis and Clark is like a needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard.
It's pretty hard to do.
It's pretty hard to be definitive.
Yeah. Yes, it is. I think the provenance of that first exchange, I mean, you can, as you've kind of explained, tie it to the mint at Philadelphia, and we can then assume it got on the boat and was in the gear, and then because of where it was found, it was probably either one of Lewis and Clark's guys dropped it, or they gave it to somebody who then subsequently dropped it 80 years later, and then it was picked up. But it is kind of disappointing not to know the tribe or the group that came through and camped near that homesteader site in the 1880s. That would be pretty key or good to know. For readers who want to dive into this, Father Francis Paul Pruca has written a book, and you're probably familiar with that. We've got a copy here, and any most larger libraries will have that, about Indian peace medals, and not just Jefferson peace medals, but all the way from kings, French and English kings, to the late 19th century when the peace medals were kind of no longer fabricated or no longer manufactured. I think into the last president to do them might have been Harrison. Not sure how
yes.
late. Yeah, yeah, sounds right.
Harrison was lost, mostly because the free sovereign native nation situation was kind of changed to the point where It seemed like it was, at least according to the government, necessary right. anymore.
There were other means mm-hmm. of making agreements, which is another podcast.
Yep.
It is something that was no longer seen as fitting. I have met John Spotted Tail, who lives on Rosebud. His fifth great-grandfather is the Spotted Tail. And John, as a hand-me-down, has Spotted Tail's peace medal that President Grant gave to Spotted Tail. And it has President Grant's likeness on it. And I was at an event about 2 years ago, and John Spotted Tail was wearing it. And I walked up to him and I said, "Tell me about that." And it was in pristine shape. It was an amazing, clean, gleaming, beautiful piece. And I was thinking it was a replica. And I said, "So tell me about your peace medal." And he said, "Well, this was given to Spotted Tail by President Grant at the White House when he went for peace treaty negotiations in the 1870s, would have been. And it's been handed down generation to generation. And my mother gave this to me when he was a mature man," he said. She didn't give it to me as a young man. She gave it to me when I was ready to take care of it. And so it's been in the family ever since. And it's in wonderful, amazing shape. So it was wonderful to see that it still, for the Spotted Tail family, still has that great meaning because of how he got it and that it's still in the family and so forth.
You see him every once in a while in those earlier paintings, and sometimes you'll see him in photographs and handed down. And oftentimes, as we know from, you know, years of hearing about these medals popping up and then being repatriated, which
yeah.
I believe you guys know about up in Pier,
yeah.
And it's a lot of times reburied, you know, not necessarily something, you know, it was intended to be. They are buried with some of those individuals.
Yes.
And then unearthed later on. And, you know, so it's interesting. And we really wanted to, knowing that the Jefferson Medal was coming here and understanding we've been working with some representatives of the Dakota, Lakota, Nakota.
Okay.
Because Yankton is the Hanktwa. Yankton uh-huh. is the home of the Yankton Nation for quite a long time. Not forever, but a very long time. And here at the Mead Museum, we wanted to ensure that we brought in that Ihangtwa narrative. And so reaching out to some of those coalition members and working with some other things, you know, you'll be hearing about some future exhibits. We've got a 2026 exhibit that they're heavily involved with right now sure. With us. And but we had said, you know, we knew if this medal is coming here, there's no way we can have it on display without also covering the other side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
The recipient is just as important as the person giving it.
Right.
And it was really great. Mary Berto, who is a Oglala Lakota, had worked with her group, and they had put together a really nice little summary that goes on. It's on the exhibit new panel in front of the peace medal. Essentially talking about the medal as something that was a peace deal, a trade deal, a good thing. It started with good relations, good ideas, good thoughts. It just over the centuries has turned into, of course, a huge disappointment, to say the least.
Yeah.
And, you know, so these medals have a different legacy among the nations and I think it depends on, you know, there she's specifically talking about Jefferson. You know, the Lewis and Clark expedition from our coalition standpoint is kind of the beginning of the end of their way of life. Mm-hmm. You know, when we say all the time when we have kids come through our exhibit about Lewis and Clark is they came to document people, places, and resources, a way to get to the ocean. Mm-hmm. Discovery is such an interesting term to use for the group. Yeah, they were discovering resources, but they, you know, there was obviously an entire world already here. And their job is to figure out who's here, what's going on,
right.
What, you know. So to negate the fact that, you know, there's an entire world fully functioning just fine before Lewis and Clark came along, we wanted to make sure that we took some time to call that out.
Yeah.
And to have respect for the other side of that narrative.
Yeah. The way the different tribes kind of experienced that, post Lewis and Clark transit, I think it's the Hidatsa who definitely didn't want anything to do with peace metals after the 1820s due to the smallpox epidemics and other poor relations and fighting with the United States Army and so forth in 1823 to 1825 in the Northern Plains, that they viewed the Jefferson peace medals and the subsequent peace medals as kind of a bad omen. So in fact, uh-huh. Somebody told me this, I don't know if this is absolutely true or not, but the Hidatsa went leave them behind with other tribes that they weren't getting along with as a bad curse on you guys, or try to give them back, or just leave them where they found them because they thought this was a bad omen for the future. Which is fair enough.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
it's interesting that encouraging people to remember that, one Native nation did not experience this the same, even at the time. The relationships, the encounters, mm-hmm. the things that happened. In our exhibit here, when we had opened here, one of our things we wanted to do was cover the entire Lewis and Clark expedition.
Okay.
Because we felt like there were things, as a Dakota territorial focus is what we do early on. Mm-hmm. We know that the relations and there are events that happen on that journey had long, far-reaching, over time consequences and influence on the development of Dakota Territory. So we definitely wanted to cover a little bit broader than, a lot of the places along the Lewis and Clark Trail, cover really just what happened in that area.
Right.
We felt we wanted to cover the whole thing, which is, in a nutshell, it is very extensive topic.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just a little bit, but we do cover the whole the whole part of it, and trying to also bring in we're working now. The next step for this is to bring in the oral traditions and the oral histories from the nations along the trail to intersperse in with that narrative.
Okay. Well, wonderful. Well, how long is this peace medal available to be seen? Are you going to have it on display until when? What's the plan?
So there is not a definitive time.
Okay.
But I do believe it's for at least a year. I think you could safely say, and if you can make the time to get here within the next year, I think it will be here for sure until next spring, if not through next summer. But there's no, just that was part of the agreement, was that there was no end agreement. So we have it until such time it needs to go elsewhere.
Okay.
But Larry Ness has been so generous.
Yeah.
And he is excited that people get a chance to see it. Nobody's going to see it in his basement, even though he's got amazing museum quality situations in his basement.
Yeah.
He is happy to see that people can enjoy it, because nobody's going to be able to really enjoy it in his basement. But that is definitely on display for as long as he's agreeable to it being here.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, and just then the peace medal itself has President Jefferson's likeness. And then maybe it's best to kind of wrap up our show episode about this with it's got his likeness. But on the other side, what's the image?
So on the other side is obviously there's always been kind of that, who exactly is it? Just sort of as a representation of a government arm cuffs and Native Nation cuffs.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's crossed at the top is a peace pipe and a hatchet or an axe crossing the top.
Mm-hmm.
So really just that symbol of we want to come together in peace and we want to trade.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, and this is an artifact from 1802, 1803, 1804 time frame. As you said, the first century, roughly, 80 years are kind of unknown, but we can piece together some informed guesses about how it traveled to where it was found. And then it spent some time out on the Christmas tree for the family. And and that's, that's a history also that's not unimportant in any, how a family would give this gift to a baby across the street that they had nothing to give and they wanted to give a present. That says something too, that, and that they may not have actually been aware of exactly what they had, but they gave it anyway, because it was something that was shiny and they thought was appropriate. Mm-hmm. And he kept it, and they kept it in the family. That says something that's unique. And, you know, thankfully they didn't sell it off for, in the 1880s, it might've been sold for scrap. In fact, many of these may have been sold for scrap just because the people were ignorant about what they had, and yeah, the history is at a loss for that. So we're very glad that this family gave it to, found it in the dirt and saved it and sent it on its way. I think most museums are populated with several things in their collection that have spent 100 years in a closet, or one person's closet and another person's closet and a great grandson's closet. And he finally says, what am I doing with this? And this needs to, as the other Dr. Jones might say, this belongs in a museum, right? So we gotta
thank goodness people do. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank goodness
people do. And thank goodness people do. Yeah, we want to encourage that. So, well, Crystal, thanks for joining us today on History 605, and good luck with the exhibit, this particular one, and all the others in the future.
Thanks so much. We look forward to all of our visitors and learning more about it. Maybe somebody will walk in the door and teach us something. So
great. Thanks a lot.
We'd like to thank Howard and Dorothy Gruer for their passion for history and the support of the South Dakota State Historical Society. It's through gifts such as theirs that we're able to tell South Dakota's history.
When a tornado hits a town, I've never been able to figure out which houses were the Democrats or the Republicans or the Libertarians. I never knew who the Norwegians were, the Swedes, or the Czechoslovakians or the Germans. Of course, everybody wants to point out who the Irish are, but other than that...
History 605 is produced by the South Dakota State Historical Society, and its audio engineer is the amazing Kevin Larson. We'd like to thank our partner, South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and most importantly, we'd like to thank you for listening. Please rate us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to fine podcasts. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another episode of History 605.